Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking to Laura. Laura is an author and a mum of two. Just over 5 years ago, she was diagnosed with breast cancer while pregnant with her second child. We'll be speaking about her experience and how much has changed since she finished treatment. Laura, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I wonder if you could start off by telling me a bit about when you were first diagnosed with breast cancer.
Yeah, so I had a two-year-old son, and I was pregnant with my second child, who turned out to be a daughter, on the morning of the 20-week scan. So about halfway through the pregnancy, I found the lump and showed my husband, and he said, yeah, something you should get checked out. My mum had already had breast cancer at that stage. And so we went along to the scan and found out that we were having a girl and that everything was looking good. And then a couple of days later, I went to the GP and she examined me and said she wasn't sure about the lump. I was expecting her to tell me it was something to do with the pregnancy, like a blocked duct or something like that. But she was really honest. She said she didn't know, so she referred me to the breast clinic, and I got my appointment within 2 weeks. And pretty soon after that, I had a couple of appointments, but pretty soon after that, I had my diagnosis. I think I was 5 months pregnant by the time the diagnosis came through.
Wow. So a real mix of emotions going on there.
Yeah. I remember really clearly not being able to take everything in at the scan. Because obviously I didn't know anything at that stage, but it was playing on my mind, and I was really convinced we'd be told we were having another boy. I was really surprised we were having a girl, and we started talking in the car on the way home about names for girls, and all the time it was just kind of niggling and ruining things for me. And then I went along to my first breast clinic appointment on my own. I was quite it wasn't so much that I was confident that I'd be told it was nothing, but I was just very practical about it. The appointment was late in the afternoon, and one of us needed to pick up our son from nursery, and we didn't really want to tell anybody else at that time because we didn't want them to worry if there was nothing to worry about. So I said to my husband, you pick up Joe and I'll go to the appointment. And it ended up being much more traumatic, that appointment, than I expected it to be. There was a point where I was changing into a hospital gown and I was looking at myself in the mirror, and I was very visibly pregnant, and everybody else in the waiting room was 30, 40, 50 years older than me. And I just suddenly felt the kind of inherent wrongness in the situation, you know, to be changing into a gown while pregnant for a medical procedure that's nothing to do with the pregnancy. And I had the biopsy that day, and it was quite painful, and I wasn't really prepared for that. I thought it was just going to be a kind of an examination. So yeah, that was a really tough day. I went out to the car afterwards and sat and cried for a while before I drove home. And I think quite soon after that, we knew that things weren't going to turn out well.
Goodness, yeah.
But I thought the main thing I was thinking about was whether they'd say I had to terminate the pregnancy, because I think you're just so focused when you're pregnant on the child you're carrying more than yourself, really. And so that was kind of utmost in my mind. And I think if I'd been in the first trimester, that might have been the case. But because I was over halfway through the pregnancy, it didn't turn out that way. They were able to kind of let me continue and do my surgery and treatment and everything around the fact that I was pregnant.
I suppose you've already spoken to us about this a little bit. You've written for us. So you were able to carry your pregnancy to term, thankfully, and you now have your daughter as well, which is obviously fantastic that you were able to do that. Despite all the difficulty that was going on at the time, it must have been, you know, very very difficult for you and your husband to deal with that. But you started treatment just after she was born, is that right?
Yeah, I had a lumpectomy while I was still pregnant, when I was 27 weeks pregnant. And it was a bit nerve-wracking because they said there was a small chance that the surgery could take me into labour. So I woke up and my main concern was that I was still pregnant and not being blue-lighted by ambulance to a hospital with a maternity unit. And then, yeah, I ended up having her at 35 weeks. I had a lot of scans to check her growth. And they decided then that, because it's the balance between giving the baby enough time to grow and be healthy and how quickly they want to start on the chemotherapy. So they're weighing up those two things. So at 35 weeks, they decided she was nearly 6 pounds, which is really good size. So that's when I had her. And then when she was 7 days old, I had my first round of chemo. Whenever I tell people about that, it always seems absolutely mad, but it just was, you know, they told me that's what I had to do. And so that's what I did. And it was hard, but that's how it was.
Mm. It's just any one of those things, you know, being pregnant, having a newborn, going through chemotherapy, the most stressful things you could go through, and you're doing them all in quick succession.
Yeah, and she was very poorly as well. When she was born, she was very seriously ill as well, and it wasn't to do with her coming early. Mm. But we nearly lost her, and we live in Leicestershire. She had to go up to Sheffield to a children's hospital there, and my husband was up there with her for a couple of weeks. And so when I started chemo, she wasn't even home and she was still in intensive care. So there was a huge amount going on, and you just had to live kind of hour by hour. Like, what are we doing now? Okay, we're doing chemo. And in the days after my first chemo, I was traveling up to Sheffield to visit my daughter and my husband with a sick bowl, just expecting at any moment to be kind of seized with nausea. I was never sick the whole time I was having chemo. But when you, I think that's the image that you have, isn't it, of somebody really weak and vomiting. And so I didn't go anywhere without a sick bowl, but luckily I didn't need it.
I don't know how you dealt with that. And I'm really pleased that you're speaking to us about it now, because you are 5 years the other side of this. But you also, I think around the same time, found out that you had the BRCA2 gene. Is that right? Or did that come a bit later on that you found that out?
No, it was all around the same time. It was while I was still pregnant. So April, I had my diagnosis, and May I found out I had the BRCA2 gene mutation, and June my daughter was born. So I did talk to the doctors. I don't know, my biology isn't very good, and I said to them, can you do a C-section and take my ovaries at the same time? And they said no, we don't do that. So I was very determined that I didn't want to have any more children. Mm. So I wanted them to remove my ovaries, and I wanted to have a double mastectomy because I wanted to reduce my risk of, you know, breast and ovarian cancer as much as possible. But nobody took me very seriously, because I think when you're pregnant or you've just given birth, everybody says, oh, I'm never doing that again. And so they wouldn't believe me when I said, I definitely don't want any more children. It was quite frustrating because I'd always only wanted two children. Mm. My husband only wanted two children. And so, you know, it wasn't a spur of the moment decision, but they did eventually listen to me. And in the November of that same year, I had my ovaries removed. And then January of the following year, when my daughter was 6 months, I had a double mastectomy. So there was a lot of surgery, a lot of recovery, a lot of support from family. And when I look back at her baby days, I don't remember much of it. It's quite sad. Mm. I was there, and I was kind of fully functioning as a parent. I was never, even during the chemo, I was never kind of in bed, apart from, you know, the odd afternoon nap or something. I was looking after them. But it's all just a complete blur because it was so full on.
Yeah, I kind of imagine just being battered from all sides by chemotherapy, two small children, everything else you had going on.
Children too young to know, to understand. You know, you couldn't say to them, "Mummy." If you said to them, "Mummy's not very well," the only "not very well" they understand is having a cold or something like that. So they didn't understand this kind of continuous, not very well, and they didn't understand how serious it was because we didn't want them to know how serious it was. But it was kind of a blessing and a curse because it meant I had to just get on with things, which was good. But it also meant there was just no respite, and there was no, I was in groups and people were saying, oh, I've run out of things to watch on Netflix. And I was thinking, oh, I would kill for an afternoon just lying on the sofa watching Netflix. So yeah, it was good in that it kind of kept me going and it didn't let, there was no room for kind of wallowing, but it did also mean it was very full on.
Well, these the groups that you were in then, was that just other women that were going through cancer treatment then?
Yeah, I was in Younger Breast Cancer Network, which I think evolved out of one of your events, one of your Younger Women Together events.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
Yeah, it's a Facebook group for women who are 45 or under who have a breast cancer diagnosis. And it's just it's a real lifeline, because if you go to local support groups or just, you know, your local breast care centre, it's unusual to find somebody young. I went to one support group and they asked me if I was the speaker. Nobody kind of expects you to have breast cancer when you're in your 30s. So Younger Breast Cancer Network, it's got loads of people who are grappling with the same issues of either having young children to look after or possibly fertility issues, because a lot of people, chemo causes infertility. And so just to be able to talk about those particular issues was really, really important. So that was a huge lifeline for me, that group. And also I went to a Breast Cancer Now Younger Women Together event, and that was wonderful, and I'm still in touch with the women I met there.
That's so good. That's always lovely to hear, even if they are telling you about watching Netflix while you've got two small children to care for. but since then, I mean, a lot has happened. I know you've published three books. That's amazing, just to get done in that time. And one of them is about, I don't know if it's necessarily autobiographical, at least semi-autobiographical, but it's about a woman's experience with breast cancer. So do you want to tell us a bit more about your writing, about that novel in particular? Yeah, have you found your writing to be kind of therapeutic in a way?
Yeah, so the first two novels I had already written before my breast cancer, but I hadn't managed to find a publisher for them. And then in the November after I just finished my chemo, I did a challenge. It's called NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month. A lot of people try to write 50,000 words in November. And I did that, and I didn't have anything planned for it. And so I remember thinking, I'm just going to have to write about breast cancer because that's been my life for the last few months and I don't have anything else planned. So I wrote a very rough draft of what became that third novel, which is called I Wanted You to Know. And I didn't think much about it. It isn't autobiographical. It's about a woman who's much younger than me. She's 21. She's a young mum, very young mum, and she's got breast cancer. And I think I wasn't ready to write about me. There are obviously, there's parts of my experience in it, but I think I needed to project it onto somebody else. And I also think Jess's story is a really tragic one. And I think I needed to put all my worst fears into this book as a way of kind of defending myself against them. So I kept thinking, if I put all the worst possible things in this book, then they won't happen to me in real life. So I kind of used it as a way to explore my fears about dying and leaving my children behind, because I think that's one of your worst fears when you're a mum. So I wrote it, and then quite soon after that, I found a publisher for one of my other novels. And when they said, have you got anything else? I said, yeah. And I sent them all three, and they ended up publishing all three of them. But I think they're all special to me, all of the books, but that one's kind of seems to have hit a nerve with a lot of people, because I've been contacted by people who have lost a friend or who've lost a child or who've lost a parent to cancer, and people kind of put themselves in different roles in the book, you know, because there's a close friendship in it and there's a mother-daughter relationship, and so people say to me, oh, I really identified with this character, and it kind of it helped me to understand what that person might have been feeling and going through at that time. So yeah, and I also blogged all the way through. And yeah, I did find it really therapeutic. It was just a way, well, it was like a practical thing. It was a way to keep everybody updated, everybody in my life, about what was going on. But it was also just, it's just the way I process things, writing things down. So, and it always has been. So it made sense for me to kind of put my story down on the screen.
Yeah, we I think we tend to try and encourage people to at least explore writing as a route of maybe therapy, but also maybe just kind of reflection. But I guess at the same time, it probably makes you feel a bit vulnerable to have that side of you out there. How did you kind of deal with that side of things?
I don't know. I've never really worried about that too much. I'm quite open on social media about things that go on in my life, and sometimes people say to me, "Oh, it must be hard to have talked about that in public," and I don't really find that. I just find I've made really good connections through being open like that. I've had people get in touch to say, "I was diagnosed and I read your blog and then I followed you on Twitter and it's really helped me." And if it helps somebody, then I think it's helped me, you know, to do that. So no, I haven't really felt vulnerable like that. When I was first diagnosed, I felt like I was the only person in the world who'd ever been diagnosed with breast cancer while pregnant. And that is far from being the case, but I did feel like that. And I didn't want anybody else to feel like that. So I wanted to kind of be as public as possible with my story, so that if somebody else found themselves in that position, they might come across my story. And of course, now that I'm 5 years down the line and quite healthy, and my children are healthy and everything, then again, I like to say to people, because when I first joined the group, I talked about Younger Breast Cancer Network, there were a lot of posts from people who were a few years down the line, whose hair had grown back. And those posts were really inspiring and encouraging. Like, oh, this could be me in a few years. And now it is me. So now it's my turn to do that for other people.
That's so lovely to hear. Like you say, is that kind of that strength and that unity of seeing other people that are further down the line. I think that's part of what we like to give people from the Younger Women Together Moving Forward groups, is just seeing, you know, even if you're not there yet, you will get there.
Yeah.
So that's, it's lovely to be able to talk to someone who has been in both those positions, and yeah, you now see yourself further down the line. Looking back to those times then when you were looking ahead to this point in your life, what are some things that you wish you knew then, when you were first diagnosed?
I've been thinking about this, and my initial response is that I wish I'd known that I would be here 5 years later and that would get to see my daughter go to school. She started school and then we were back in lockdown, so she very quickly was home again. But, you know, things like that milestone, seeing her go in on her first day of school, I didn't know whether I'd get to see that. And so part of me thinks it would have been nice to know that, but also some terrible things have happened in those 5 years as well. I've lost a close friend, and my sister is very seriously unwell. And I think it would have been better not to know those things. And so I think sometimes it's better not to know anything and just blindly feel your way through it, to be honest.
I'm so sorry to hear about those other things you have going on. It sounds like the world is throwing quite a lot at you already, especially with, I think something that a lot of people will be able to relate to is having young children during a pandemic and having them at home. Just sort of everything else is just amplified, isn't it? But yeah, like you say, I think it is a case of you have to feel your way through and find something that works for you. Was there anything in particular that helped you physically, though? Was there, you know, something that you found helpful in regaining your energy and just kind of adjusting to a new normal?
I don't think there was, to be honest. One of the things I've been dealing with that was like wasn't forefront of my mind was menopause. When I said to them, you know, I want my ovaries removed, I don't want to have any more children, I didn't think about the fact that that would put me into menopause, which might sound very naive, but there was just, I guess, so much going on. And to me, reducing the risk of cancer was the main thing. And I didn't know much about menopause, and I was 36 when I had my ovaries removed, and I'm 40 now, and so I still don't have friends who are going through the same thing. I've read quite a few books about it, and that's helped finding connecting with people. That's the crux of it all for me, is connecting with people who are going through similar things. But for that in particular, like, I'm not allowed to have HRT, so I haven't got that kind of help, and I haven't found any kind of herbal things that have really helped. But reading about other people's experiences has helped. So I guess books are a huge part of my life, and so I turn to books for everything. So, you know, why wouldn't I turn to books for this?
Books and connection, I think, are two of the most important things. Maybe speaking personally as someone who also enjoys reading and learning from others. What might you say to someone now who has recently been diagnosed, or perhaps isn't as far along in their recovery as you are? Are there any words of advice that you would share?
I have a blog post I wrote specifically for this purpose, because since my diagnosis, I get contacted all the time by people, you know, their sister's cousin or their neighbor's friend, or, you know, somebody connected to them, or even them, have been diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And I used to spend a lot of time responding to those messages and saying, I want to tell them about this support group. I want to tell them about these products and services. I don't know, things like Look Good, Feel Better, just, you know, a few nice perks. And then I decided, I'm always saying the same thing in these messages. So I wrote a blog post, thoughts for the recently diagnosed. And now I just send the link to that to people. It happens more than I would imagine. But yeah, I always want to do anything I can to help people. If people get in touch, or somebody gets in touch on behalf of somebody else, I always say, give them my phone number. I'm happy to talk about it. I think some people say to me, don't you want to just put it all behind you and move on? But I do feel this responsibility to the people who are in the position I was in 5 years ago, to kind of help them find their way through it. And so, yeah, I'm always open to people asking me questions. Sometimes people say, you probably don't want to think about this or talk about this. And to be honest, I'll talk about anything, because it's a horrible thing to go through. But, you know, what's the point in being secretive about it? Some people are a lot more private than me, but from my perspective, like, might as well talk about it. My mum had breast cancer before me, and we didn't talk about it a lot. But I mean, I guess she didn't ever think that at 35 I would go through it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just as open as possible. And when the time comes to talk to my children about the BRCA gene, I'll try to be very open with them as well.
And just as you have shared resources with people, I would hope there are kind of other resources out there that will help you through that part. And like you say, kind of sharing these experiences, getting out there, collectively coming together, hopefully there'll be enough information that other people find this a little bit easier. It's never going to be easy, but a little bit easier, hopefully.
Yeah, if people can, because there's things that I remember when I look back, I think, so-and-so, this friend sent me this book, and this friend sent me cake, and this friend, when I had surgery, sent frozen meals for the family. And, you know, you look back and those are kind of moments that you pick out as good moments that you remember. And so if you can do that for somebody else, then why wouldn't you, really? Like, why wouldn't you make that horrible thing they're about to go through just a tiny bit easier? So one of the things I did for I had this 5-year thing in mind, and we were still in lockdown, and so there wasn't a huge amount I could do. So I found 5 people who are going through cancer or have been affected by cancer, and I sent a couple of them a book, and I sent one of them some cake. And I just thought, if you're able to financially and physically, and you know, it's just nice to do nice things for other people, because when all of it was going on, those little nice things that people did really meant a huge amount.
It's kind of paying it forward in a way.
Yeah,
that's lovely. We already slightly touched on, a lot of people will talk about finding a new normal after a cancer diagnosis. Is this something that resonates with you?
Yeah, definitely. I remember my mum saying very early on, oh, hopefully it'll be 6 months and then you'll be back to normal. And I don't feel back to normal. And I don't think I'll ever feel back to normal. So I feel like I've come out of the other side a completely different person. And some aspects of that are quite sad. You know, there's things I've lost, but other aspects, I feel like I'm a better person. So I try not to dwell too much on who I was, and just think about who I am now. And like I say, in some ways I'm better, and in some ways I'm not, I don't think I'm worse, but in some ways I'm more anxious and more sad. But in other ways, I have more empathy. I'm always trying to look for ways to be kind to other people. And just think about the fact that you don't know what other people are dealing with, you know, behind closed doors. So, yeah, definitely new normal. I feel unrecognizable to the person I was before. But hopefully that's not a bad thing.
I would hope it isn't either. And it sounds like what you have gained through, you know, talking about empathy, I think that's an incredibly important trait to have. And it sounds like what you're giving to other people, even if it is just cake or a book, sounds like it meant a lot to you at that time. So I think it's, you know, probably means a lot to the people that you're helping right now. What comes next? Are you still writing? Do you intend to write more about your experiences with breast cancer? Or is that something that you do want to be a closed chapter, so to speak, and to kind of pursue other things?
I'm still writing kind of more than ever. And I don't think I'm done talking about breast cancer, to be honest. I'm working on a proposal for a nonfiction project, which isn't going to be about breast cancer, but breast cancer will definitely kind of play a part in it. And then I was kind of plotting out an idea for a new novel, and it had 5 female characters. And I thought, oh, maybe one of them's had breast cancer. I was thinking about scars and, you know, people being anxious about new relationships. And I thought maybe she's had breast cancer and she feels like it would be hard to meet a new partner because of that. So again, it wasn't the crux of the story. I don't think I'll ever write another novel that is as much about breast cancer as I Wanted You to Know. I think that was something I needed to do, and it's done. But I think it will probably find its way into my work in all kinds of different ways, just because as I explore different aspects of it, you know, internally, I'll probably explore them on the page as well, just because that's what I do. So I think I'm not finished with it, but I don't think it will be the sole focus of a project again.
No, that completely makes sense. It's almost like you said, you put all your fears into that novel, and now it's allowed you to kind of move forward a little bit. But yeah, obviously it's still going to influence your work as it influences your life.
I think I've done the kind of tragic novel about breast cancer, and now maybe I'll look at people who've had breast cancer and survived and it hasn't defeated them. So maybe I'll look at more positive aspects of it, because I think is it 1 in 8 women that will have breast cancer in their life? And so it makes sense that these portrayals are in women's fiction, which is what I write. And it's important to have, as well as, you know, tragic story of people dying very young of breast cancer, it's important to have resilient women who've come through it and come out the other side as well, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Laura.
Thanks so much for having me today.
You can find Laura's novels by visiting laurapearsonauthor.com, or you can find her on Twitter at laurapauthor. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services, and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.